Support for this podcast comes from the Central Valley Journalism Collaborative, connecting communities with the resources, infrastructure, and networks to ensure a vibrant local free press.
From KVPR in Fresno, this is Central Valley Daily. It's Wednesday, March 25th. I'm Elizabeth Arkalian. Last week, the world learned shocking details about the late civil rights leader Cesar Chavez. The New York Times laid out an alleged pattern of sexual abuse.
You know, he did a lot of good for a lot of people, and he did a lot of bad.
In a matter of hours, communities up and down California began removing public references to Chavez. We speak with a biographer who knows his legacy intimately. But first, these news headlines. The University of Southern California canceled a gubernatorial debate that was scheduled for Tuesday after candidates of color were excluded. Two Republicans and four Democrats, who are all white, were slated to participate. But four prominent Democratic candidates of color did not meet the criteria, which was based on their polling and fundraising. Meanwhile, a debate that is scheduled to take place in Fresno on April 1st is still on. New polling released today shows two Republicans lead the field, with the Democrat in third place. The son of the late Filipino farmworker activist Larry Itliong weighed in on the allegation against labor leader Cesar Chavez. Johnny Itliong says he tried to speak out about abuse by Chavez for years. The New York Times laid out a pattern of sexual abuse by Chavez. He, along with Dolores Huerta and Larry Itliong, gave rise to the modern farmworker movement. The son of Itliong, Johnny, tells 23ABC in Bakersfield that the revelations bring a sense of justice to those who were victims of Chavez or who have otherwise been overlooked.
At the same time, you know, it gives a chance to straighten the history out. It gives a chance to the victims to get some sort of redemption.
Communities across California are actively removing Chavez's name from government buildings, schools, and streets following the revelations. Republican lawmakers at the state capitol are pushing a bill that would provide free access to menstrual products for female farm workers. Laura Fitzgerald reports from Sacramento.
The measure would require the California Department of Public Health to work with local nonprofits to provide women farm workers with menstrual hygiene supplies free of cost. Republican Assemblymember Jeff Gonzalez represents Coachella and introduced the bill.
No woman should have to choose between her health, her dignity, and her paycheck.
Bella Sanchez, whose mother worked in agricultural fields, says schools and some workplaces already provide free pads and tampons.
But farmworker women, the women who work the land, who work in landscaping, who labor outdoors in remote rural areas, they were left out. They remain invisible.
The bill would require the state to prioritize rural agricultural communities with higher poverty rates. It's pending in the Assembly Health Committee. In Sacramento, I'm Laura Fitzgerald.
A federal judge in California ordered the U.S. government to return a woman who was deported to Mexico last month despite having protection through the DACA program. The judge ordered the government to bring back the 42-year-old woman from Sacramento within the next week. An attorney for the woman says she was deported within a day after appearing for an immigration appointment. Lawyers for the government argue that federal authorities have discretion over deportation decisions. There are roughly 144,000 DACA recipients in California. There is some good news on the butterfly front. The World Wildlife Fund has revealed that the population of monarch butterflies in Mexico increased by 64% this past winter. It's a glimmer of hope for a species that has been in danger of extinction. The monarchs have long been a symbol of North America because millions of them migrate from Canada to the forests of western Mexico. Between November and December, the monarchs also rest along a stretch of California's central coast.
Central Valley Daily listeners like to know what's going on in their community. And coming up this spring is our Corks and Brews event. On Sunday, May 3rd, we'll have nearly 40 different wineries and breweries waiting to pour you a drink. Come put a face to the names of the people behind this podcast. We'll also have live music, a silent auction, and food trucks. Tickets are $75. Get yours today at kvpr.org.
And now to our main story. Cesar Chavez's legacy seemingly toppled overnight last week when allegations of his sexual abuse were reported in the New York Times. The public reaction was swift. The state holiday on March 31st, named after Chavez, will now be celebrated as simply Farmworkers Day. And many towns and cities up and down the state have nixed statues, streets, and schools named after the late farmworker union leader. To parse through the massive fallout of Chavez's legacy, today we're speaking to someone who wrote extensively about him, biographer Miriam Powell.
It's really interesting because I just read a column by Marcos Breton, and the Fresno Bee reran a story that he did in 1992. And I think that Marcos's take, which was, I think the headline said something like, "I'm shocked but not surprised." And I would concur with that. I think that for people who knew a lot about Cesar Chavez, you know, he did a lot of good for a lot of people, and he did a lot of bad. And the sort of more sanitized hagiographic image of him, I think the people who had that are having more difficulty with this. I think it's a different story in the Valley and in farmworker communities than in some other parts of the country. So I think that this, you know, while obviously shocking and disturbing revelations, there's ways in which it's consistent with his abusive behavior towards people in other, you know, not physical ways.
Mm. Yeah, when you say you're shocked but not surprised, I'm curious, when you were writing your 2014 biography of Chavez, were there hints or rumblings of this behavior, or was this out of the blue?
So, you know, Cesar's, and I write in the book that his adultery was well known in the union and people around him. Helen Chavez, his wife, left him on more than one occasion. There was one particularly public break in 1977 in which she intercepted a love letter from an 18-year-old and left him, and he therefore was sort of forced to be public about this turmoil and accusation in the larger movement as a whole. And I think that incident is very interesting and sort of telling for a number of reasons, because the way he spun that was to say that this was a plot to get him from the communists and other people who were particularly on the left, who were out to undermine the union, and that they used women as bait in order to do this kind of. And that was how he attempted to sort of publicly justify the fact that his wife had moved out. And the meeting at which this takes place, and we know all of this, by the way, because he taped dozens and dozens of very important meetings during that sort of key period in the late 1970s, and all of those tapes are preserved in the Walter Reuther Labor Library in Detroit. So you can listen to this sort of the agonized debates, you know, at the time. And a lot of purges, as they were called at the time, a lot of people who were accused of being thieves and spies and communists, including some of the major Filipino leaders of the union at the time. So again, there's sort of a lot of emotional abuse that was being sort of leveled by him at the time, that all of these other, what we're now learning about, were, you know, widespread sort of, or at least these particular incidents were taking place.
Mm, yeah, it sounds like paranoia.
I try to shy away from using clinical diagnoses that I don't know, but there are certainly people who felt he had become very paranoid. There were threats on his life. He certainly felt that there were a lot of people out to get him, and that there were a lot of people trying to sort of seize control and take over something that, you know, he really did create from nothing. And that period of the late 1970s and early 1980s is a very difficult time with a lot of ramifications, both for the union and the movement and people in it, and also for the farm workers. And again, that's why I think it's really terrific that the Bee actually reprinted these stories from the early 1990s, when Cesar Chavez was still alive, that talk about what had become of the movement already at that point in time.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, you know, he did have security. There were actual threats going on at that time. But once we learn about these allegations, yes, we can all do our own analysis and wonder, was this a guilty conscience, paranoia, what sort? It's hard to know what the inner workings and the dynamics were at the time, but that's where a biographer like you comes in and can educate us a little bit. And I'm curious because I want to dive just a little bit deeper into your biography and discuss his legacy before this news broke. Because in your book titled The Crusades of Cesar Chavez, what were the crusades that you really set out to chronicle?
Yeah, and so that was an interesting choice of word in the title and got some mixed reactions. But it was a crusade that gave hope to people and to a whole generation of farm workers and poor people who never thought they could get out of the fields. And he really did found a movement that showed that those people that the poorest people by organizing and banding together could take on the most powerful business entity in the state at the time, that the agricultural industry, and win. And that message, you know, not only sort of changed the lives for that generation of farm workers, but also inspired a lot of organizing in the cities and in what was, you know, the sort of the burgeoning Chicano movement at the time. So I tried to reconcile that with the failure ultimately of the United Farm Workers to be a sustained labor union for farm workers. And a lot of that, again, the sort of central time of the 1970s, there are these agonizing conversations that you can listen to on these tapes where people say, are we a movement or a union? Because we can't be both. And his answer always was, we're a movement first. And he was much more interested in that. And he talked about the idea of trying to form a poor people's movement. And a lot of that came at the expense of trying to actually be a functioning labor union, which he viewed a lot of that work as being mundane, was his word. You know, it was something that he was really not that interested in. You know, once the 1975 is a very pivotal year because the California passes what was then the only law in the country that gave farm workers the right to form unions, protected union activity. And that, you know, changes the whole nature of what the union becomes. And that becomes a real problem for him. So I wanted to understand that. And I mean, in writing the biography, you know, he had a profound impact on people who didn't know him, but also, you know, a whole lot of people who were around him and a whole generation of organizers and people who have gone on to lead in other ways. And I don't think I've ever talked to anyone who worked with the union for any amount of time, no matter how short, and no matter the circumstances under which they left, and often they left in very unpleasant ways, but they all say that they would do it again because it so profoundly influenced what they did the rest of their lives.
And I'm curious, with everything you know and your experience in writing about such a popular public figure, how should Chavez's legacy be viewed moving forward? Do we have an answer to that?
You know, I think what we've been talking about, which is that it needs to be looked at in its entirety. He did a lot of good things and he did a lot of bad things, and people have to weigh those for themselves in terms of where they come down. But I think that at his strongest, in his the way that he inspired people and what they were able to achieve, it's important to look at that, and perhaps, you know, never more important than right now, when a lot of the tactics and strategies that he used with success are needed in communities that are really very much under attack right now. And I would say that I think that's happening too, that organizations in Los Angeles like CHRLA and the Day Laborers Network, and there are a lot of people in even, you know, Minneapolis, when you look at the ways in which people are organizing, a lot of that comes out of the lessons of the early days of the farmworker movement, and we shouldn't lose sight of that.
Miriam Powell, author of Cesar Chavez's biography, The Crusades of Cesar Chavez. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thanks for taking the time.
And that is today's show. Today's episode was produced by Jonathan Linden and KVPR with support from the Central Valley Journalism Collaborative. I'm Elizabeth Arkalian. Find the latest local news anytime at kvpr.org.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube. But what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.